digitally uploaded.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the podcast. Sorry again for missing last week. We had technical issues, but we're back. And this is Matthew Sainsbury, the editor-in-chief of Digitally Downloaded. And with me this week, I have Alan.
Hey, guys.
And we have Ian and Lindsay from Giant Margarita as guest hosts.
Hello.
Hello.
Excellent. So let's jump right into it. A music track from Ninja Pizza Girl, which we had on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. Great game. Check it out when you get a chance. So it's been a pretty big week for news and releases and so on and so forth this week. We'll start with the most obvious one, I guess. Uncharted 4, not 5, 4. The embargo on reviews was lifted and everybody's reviews came out, and with a Metacritic average of 94, I believe, at this point in time. It's a pretty popular game. It's going to be a big one once it releases to the public next week. So I've had a play of it myself. My review's up on Digitally Downloaded, and I get to have the distinction of having the lowest score for Uncharted 4 with 4 out of 5. Which is obviously a good game, but try telling the fans that. It's well worth looking forward to. I don't think anybody else on the podcast has actually had a chance to check it out as yet, but May 10, yep. Look forward to it. Sorry, what was that, Ian?
Very jealous that you've got to play it already. I've still got to wait until Tuesday.
I'm in the same boat. It's actually heartbreaking to see all these different things coming out. And because I played a bunch of the multiplayer beta as well.
Yeah, we did as well.
Oh, God, it's so good. Oh, I'm so excited.
We've scheduled ourselves to get together for next weekend, so first weekend that it's out, to all sit down in the house together and play the multiplayer.
Yeah, I'm so excited. It's going to be great. Genuinely keen for that game.
I've also I've been avoiding all of the hype leading up, so I've watched a couple of less than a minute of the original trailer where you saw them shooting the bags of wheat and stuff, and I went, oh my god, and then just turned it off, and that's all I've seen.
You're in for a treat.
Yeah, so I'm terrified that somehow it's going to get spoiled in the next 4 days.
The new Game of Thrones.
Yes.
It's good to say. I mean, everybody who has been worried about Sony and exclusives on the PlayStation 4 will have their concerns put to rest with this game alone. So, not that the PlayStation 4 really needed a sales boost, but I'm also certain that this will give it a big one. So, yeah, well done to Sony and Naughty Dog. So, in a slightly different direction with the shooter genre. I know Alan's been playing an awful lot of Overwatch, so take it away, Alan. I know you like this one.
So Overwatch entered open beta last week. Still last week. Last week, technically, at this point. And it is absolutely wonderful. I honestly think that if you have any interest in any shooters at all, you should actually just take a look at the open beta. Because it's one of those things where Blizzard knows how to very, very gently drop you into this world and teach you everything within about 2 seconds. As far as design's concerned, it's one of the best shooters I've ever played. Everything works, and it flows with personality and, you know, game sense from the moment that you touch it, which you don't really come across generally in most sort of shooters. I can't really say everything because it is in open beta, but, you know, it's 5 days from release. They're not going to change anything in time for this at all.
Is it just me, or is it very fast? From the little bit of footage I've seen, it seems to be very fast.
I wouldn't say it's fast as such if you're, like... It depends on who you're playing. So if you're playing a tank, it's generally a much slower game, but it's also more about placement then as well. It's a slightly faster version of TF2, I'd say. You tend to die a lot faster. You tend to have plays happen a lot faster as well. Generally, you will end up dying if you make a mistake. But that's part of the fun, I feel. And because there are so many different characters and they're all so varied, it makes a general, you know, it makes it feel really, really sort of exciting, and, you know, everything matters. Which, you know, doesn't really come across in most sort of standard FPS. List that I've seen.
Sure. As this one, I must admit, I haven't been following it that closely. Does this one have a single player mode, or is it purely multiplayer?
It's purely multiplayer, but it's so brimming with personality that you could consider it a single player mode, honestly. Like, there's enough within the characters, and I don't know if you've seen any of the amazing trailers that Blizzard put out from, but it's, I don't feel like I'm missing out by not having a single-player mode with this game. Sure. I feel like they've put all their effort into the multiplayer in creating these characters rather than a story, which I think is much more important, because when I'm playing Tracer, I play Tracer like she was being shown in the trailers. Like, I'll be darting around, you know, annoying people, just buzzing around, being a complete idiot. And that's, like, part of the story. And it might not be technically written down, but it's, you know, it's world building through characterization, and that's what I'd really want, honestly.
Sure, that sounds good.
I'm really excited to give it a play, because in a world where most shooters are incredibly grey or brown, this one seems to be really colourful, the same as TF2 was back when it came out.
Yeah, and definitely, it's going to hold up for years. And I don't know if you've seen the Japan map Hanamura, but it is absolutely gorgeous. It's beautiful.
Actually, no, I think I might have glimpsed that, and there's a lot of vibrant colours in there. The parallels to TF2 are quite interesting, and I'm scared, before having played it, that there are so many characters. There's 22, right, or something like that?
24, I think? 25?
I mean, I'm not very good at video games. I make them rather than play them, so 9 characters in TF2 was almost too much for me, so I'm scared, but... I'm also very excited to give it a crack.
Well, on that sort of idea, though, as far as I've played it, I've only played maybe about 10 hours of the beta, and they've been really, really great 10 hours. But I've taken control of almost every single character, and never once have I had a moment where I'm like, I don't know what to do. It's very, very... They teach you immediately, and even if it's just with a little bit of text saying, this is what your ability does in detail... Like, that's fine. But it really, like, it makes sense. Like, everything will fall into pieces as soon as you touch the controller, which is more than I can say for Battleborn. because their game is horrendous. Oh god.
I didn't know what was going on in that game at all when I played it. I don't play that kind of game normally, but I really had no clue who I was fighting, whether the people I was fighting were on my team, or if they were even real people or bots or anything at all. No concept whatsoever.
He's like that in every game we play.
It's true. This is the worst.
Yeah. No, I remember the first time I ever played Battleborn, it was at the PAX event in PAX Oz, and there was four other guys with me, and we were sort of like, as soon as the game ended, we all sort of got up, looked at each other, and sort of walked off sighing. It was, and I fell asleep during the open beta as well. Like, I was playing an online match and just fell asleep because I was just not into it at all. Which, yeah. Go buy Battleborn, guys. It's the new Sleeping Pills. And I think probably the last big bit of news for this week is Persona 5, which Matt's probably going to have a little bit of a gush over.
Yes, that's a very special game. I can already tell that right now. So, yeah, the Atlus had, Atlus Sega, whoever they are now, had an event over in Japan to show off a nice in-depth trailer. And the big, I guess, announcement at the end of that trailer was that it gets a September release in Japan. No idea when it'll come out west as yet, but with any luck, the localization process is already underway, so it won't be a long delay. But, yeah, the trailer just... I mean, if you could change the definition of style in the dictionary with a picture, you'd just put a picture of Persona 5, I think, because every little bit of the design of that game is just oozing with all this kind of neon, this neon urban style, which is just absolutely gorgeous. I guess with the Persona games, the previous ones, they've all been wonderful narratives, but they've all been fairly simple in terms of the visual style. This one is definitely AAA standard in terms of the JRPG genre. And if they can match that up with the characteristic storytelling of the Persona series, you're basically looking at what's going to be, you know, one of the top JRPGs released in a very long time. So, yes, the trailer itself is on YouTube now. You can go check it out. There's even translated versions of it, so you can get a sense of the story. It's going to be good. Check it out and get very excited.
I would also like to just give a quick shout-out to the music, because I was on that stream before the actual... trailer played, and the music is wonderful and very jazzy, and I'm very excited.
It's the same music guy that did the Persona 4 soundtrack, and Persona 4 is obviously one of the best soundtracks ever done for a game. So the fact that it seems to be very much in that kind of similar vein is a very good sign indeed. And the character design I also want to mention is just amazing. It's very Persona in terms of how it's done. Each of the characters all seem to be very distinct from one another. There's a good balance between male and female characters, which is always good when you have a Persona game. I just can't believe how good it actually looks. I've seen more of it in motion. One of the most amazing, if you can track down the animation, there's a GIF out there somewhere on Twitter if you look for it, of the end of a battle, the experience points are being dished out and all that kind of stuff, and even that is just so unbelievably stylish. It's just amazing.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, even though I have a problem with the Akihiko style character, and he's probably just going to be Yosuke mixed with Akihiko from P3. Or whatever his name is, I forget. The boxing guy.
Oh, yes, that one.
Yeah, he looks a lot like them, but, you know, whatever. I'll pop it. He's probably going to be different, so that's all good.
I'm just happy there's a reset-looking character, so...
Yeah. It was the first thing I thought of as well when I saw that trailer. I was like, oh, Matt's going to be happy.
Yeah, reset-looking character is enough for me, so... Yes, we'll no doubt find out more about the game in the coming months up to its Japanese release, and we will keep you across it. So we'll jump to another music track now, come back and talk about stuff.
Yay! Yep, stuff is not wrong.
We like playing Shantae music on this podcast because it's good. So we've got Lindsay and Ian on for this week from Giant Margarita, so we figured we should probably talk to them about their game. So it's Party Golf. Tell us about Party Golf, guys.
We're great fans of local multiplayer games. We've been playing heaps and heaps of games like Towerfall, and one of the things that really attracted us to that game was the amount of options you have in the multiplayer screen. So we just kept changing the way that we were playing that game, and it felt like a new game every time we went to do it. So we had a little internal game jam over last Easter, so a year ago, and we tried to make a multiplayer game with heaps of customization in 48 hours. And so we built a game, Party Golf, which was based on Desert Golfing, a mobile game that a lot of people might be familiar with, but it's side view golf, but four players all at the same time racing to the hole rather than having that nice slow golf experience where you wait for each other's turns, bashing each other out of the way, got power-ups to try and push people out of the hole, all that kind of stuff. Lindsay?
Yeah, so the customization, we really kind of took that way too far now, I think. well, I won't say that officially, but so Towerfall only has a few options, but we decided to go with, what is it, a trillion, trillion, trillion different that, combinations.
That was last year when we last worked it out.
Okay, so the number's much higher now.
I'm confident that I could say that if you all the way that we put our combinations together would have more than 10 to the power of 100 potential combinations of these things now.
It sounds a bit crazy, but I think the main reason that we've done that is that a lot of game developers develop something that they would want to play, and you often see that when people don't... they've made decisions for the players, and sometimes players won't agree with that. We're letting the players have basically unlimited options of how the rules work. So they can design their own house rules of what it means to go in the hole, or how fast everyone should be able to shoot, or adding handicapping and all that sort of stuff of their own free choice rather than us forcing it upon them. So it means our game is very open-ended, and it's really, really, really hard to program, but I think it's quite unique in that way.
Yes, we wanted to make sure that with a lot of local multiplayer games, you play them for a while and then the basic idea fades out. But with our game, what we wanted to do was make sure that you can find a different way to play the game all the time.
Yeah, I mean, when I played the game first at PAX Australia, I still remember playing like a standard game of golf with you guys, and then all of a sudden you were like, okay, let's change it up, and you added a banana to the
we
to
do
the,
that
like match. It was great, and I'm really, really excited to see how it goes, and I'm constantly getting the updates. All disclosure and stuff, I did kickstart this game.
Great. Thank you.
And I keep getting updates, and you know, it does look genuinely fun, and I'm very, very excited to play it when it comes out.
Interesting.
Especially as I have a like sort of close vicinity room in college with a lot of other people who are very excited to play, you know, FIFA or whatever. So you think next time it might actually be Card Golf instead of FIFA. Just, you know, slip that one in instead.
Please do. The funny thing about that banana mode is we didn't... our game's built to be customizable. We didn't invent that mode. We were showing this around to a bunch of different people, university students, school kids as well, and everybody managed to make a mode that was giant banana mode and found it hilarious and fun. And we were like, well, this has to be one of our standard options that we can just let people get to quickly because everybody invented it. It was the strangest thing.
Yeah, I feel like every mode has, like every single game ever has to have, you know, banana mode.
Yes, now. That'll be our trademark. We should have been giant banana.
So what was it specifically about, I guess, local multiplayer that you like?
I'm quite old, so I used to play local multiplayer when there was no option. And for a while there, people stopped making these games because there was a big push, particularly when the Xbox 360 was getting big to do everything online. The thing about local multiplayer is you've got that really... there's a social aspect to it that you don't quite get across group chat, where the people are in the same room. The amount of trash talk goes up because you're all friends. There's people can be a lot more open and meaner, but in that funny way, teasing each other and just having those people who you're playing against in that same room at that same time, and also the latency. There's no latency when you're playing local multiplayer, so it lends itself to really, really fast experiences. Towerfall in particular didn't do online play at all because they wanted to concentrate on making a game that could be played stupidly fast and have a lot of accuracy with everything you do.
Sure, and I guess your game will also not have an online multiplayer component. Is it purely local?
We haven't 100% got an official stance on that just yet because there is a lot of pressure out there to have an online component in games. Towerfall was one of the only ones that really has just flat out said no, we're not doing online, and they've been incredibly successful. If we could even have like a fraction of the success of Towerfall, that would be amazing. But I don't know if we'll get away with not having online. It's very hard being a physics-based game. It becomes incredibly unfair for the player that's not the host, with the collisions being resolved and that sort of thing. There's a lot of technical reasons why our game doesn't lend itself well to online. We want people to play it local. We want to guide people towards that in their experience.
It's primarily designed around being a local player game. And so if we end up with online multiplayer in there as well, we've got to make sure that that experience isn't going to compromise the feel of the game. We're really keen to get that right.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if I was to look at a game like Screen Sheet, which I think is an absolutely wonderful game, and it's also obviously focused very heavily on the local multiplayer experience, they do have the online multiplayer mode, and I mean, it works, but yeah, it doesn't feel like it's the native experience for the game. So you know, it's a little bit of a downer even to play it online. And yeah, I obviously don't want that to happen to your game. So yeah, I was just wondering if you felt that there was, you know, if the experience would transfer over to online as well as it does local.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there with how Screen Sheet's online aspect is different to its local. I haven't played it online, but I can see how that would happen. Our experience doesn't lend itself well to online, I don't think. We have an additional feature that's not confirmed yet that we're playing around with a lot of things. So anything I say here that's a feature is not confirmed for the thing.
Disclaimer.
But we're looking at the mobile companion app aspect of the PlayStation, where if you've got a phone connected to the PlayStation, they become a fifth player where they can actually change the rules of the game halfway through, which only really works in a local multiplayer setting where they can like stand in front of you and press the giant banana button and suddenly everyone turns into bananas. It's much better in person with that. And the other one was, I've just forgotten it, we actually have an 8-player mode with shared controllers, which of course is, yeah, we could have 16 players or whatever online, but with a local multiplayer we can actually share half a controller each because our controls are so simple that we can get 8 players using that as well.
That's really cool. I really like the idea of the companion app, because that's a feature I actually forgot the PlayStation supported. There's no games that do it. So, yeah, that'd be really cool.
Yeah, I think the only one that has really done it exceedingly well recently has been the Jackbox set.
Oh, yes, of course.
With Fibbage. I adore Fibbage.
Yeah, that's a special game.
Yeah, it's a very, 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 very fun game. I think more games need an award for person who actually wins and then person who's the funniest. Because you can't be both, ever. It's brutal.
We should award bonus points for doing ridiculous things in party golf rounds, perhaps.
Please do.
The most entertaining player.
The person who's trolled the most around gets points.
Need like a worm style, like most lemmings like or something. With like most times you've just gone off the screen for no reason.
Tuffall does have a lot of accolades like that at the end that we hope to be able to add as well, to detect certain play styles and give people awards to say, you know, most power up hungry or something like that. And it's tough example, but lots of games have that.
Yeah.
So you guys successfully kickstarted this game. How's that experience been for you during the process and afterwards?
It was Kickstarter's double-edged sword is too strong, but it was a great experience. And we've got such great feedback from all of the people who did Kickstarters, and you know it's great getting that community of people that love your game. But it's really stressful actually doing a Kickstarter. It's you become a little bit addicted to that. The ding of the sound of a new backer coming in. If you have a day where you go and you don't get any backers, then like it actually really affects you, and you think you're not going to make it. So it's a really some people struggle with things like Facebook, where they get that kind of constant feedback all the time. Our entire team was colloquially manic depressive through that period as the backing came in or not.
We recently had a Kickstarter backers party down here in Tassie. So only our Tasmanian backers were able to really attend, but it was really great to see all the people who had actually backed us all in one spot, because we've got the list of people and how much they paid and stuff, but it's to see the people in person, and we played party golf with them, the latest and greatest version of it, and it was absolutely fantastic. So it gives us a boost as well.
It does. It helps us with our motivation for continuing. We've organised this week that we're definitely going back to PAX Australia this year to exhibit, and so we're really excited to see all those people again, the ones that are out of state, to come back. Hopefully heaps of those will come back to PAX and play again and see the kind of progress that we've had.
Sounds good. Yeah, absolutely. Best of luck with it, and hopefully PAX is good for you as well this year. I'm sure Alan will be by to play Banana Mode.
I'm already planning the entire day.
we'll jump to another music break and come back and then talk about games we like that pretty much everyone else hates. Alright.
Great.
Was a track from Mega Dimension Neptunia VII on the PlayStation 4, which is a nice segue into games that we like or I like that nobody else kind of did. Obviously, that game had some pretty negative reviews back when it was released, but I loved it. And yeah, so if you like JRPGs, you might just get along with that one. So yes, this segment we're going to be talking about games that were fairly panned critically, but you know, there's always fans. Somebody always likes a game, doesn't matter how poorly it's received. And I think a good place to start with this segment would be to ask Alan what he thinks of Resident Evil 5, because yeah, he's one of the very few that like that one.
Yeah, 5 is one of the like most fun games I've ever played, honestly. But it's not Resident Evil, and that's why everyone hates it, and that's very upsetting to me, because it's like behind the veneer of look at these not Ganados, and look at this not like El Gigante. It's a really fun co-op game. Back in 2007 when it came out? Wow, I'm old. I remember playing it with a mate for the first time and being like, this is actually genuinely fun. I'm not afraid, but I'm having a great time. And yeah, it was reviewed all right, but everyone in the world appears to hate it. And that really, really frustrates me. And I'm really glad I've actually got another Resident Evil 5 apologist on my side on this podcast. Yeah, because we don't happen very often, unfortunately.
Yes, you do. I also played it co-op with a friend all the way through and 100%ed it, did everything. The thing is for me is I played a little bit of Resident Evil 1 way back on the PlayStation 1, but then didn't play any of the games in between. So I didn't have an expectation of what it was supposed to be at all. It was pretty brutal to begin with, how like it felt like a terrible game for the first level or two, to be honest, because they do kind of dump you in it, and the controls are, I would argue, deliberately really quite janky to try and make it hard for you to reload when you're in the middle of a fight and stuff like that. I think they're trying to do something with that. I'm kind of giving them... I am being an apologist here. once you get through that, though, it is just a great co-op game, and you really do, unlike a lot of co-op games, need to work together to survive a lot of circumstances when you're playing it. And that was great.
Yeah, it's one of the few sort of co-op games that really has that survival feeling. Because yes, it is brutal. Like, if you make a mistake, you're dead. I still remember being a wide-eyed, like, 11 or 10-year-old and seeing the first time that the Chainsaw Ganado, not Ganado, I don't know what they're called, the not Ganados, it's the first time he ever, like, goes for you and, like, just rips off your head, and it's like, ah! And it was, like, a really good incentive for me as a kid to be like, I don't want to die now. So, it's a genuinely wonderful game. I'd also love to give a quick little shout-out to the wonderful and also one of the worst games I've ever played in my life, Sonic 06. It's so bad, but I love it so much. It is horrendous. No one likes this game. Absolutely no one likes it. I don't know how you could. But I have a bit of a soft spot for it because it is so jank and it is so awful that it's so entertaining every time I touch it. And I know that this is one of those things where it's The Room-esque, but this is worse than The Room, and it's very, very upsetting. But I love it so much, all the same.
I've never even heard of
it. Oh, you've never heard of Sonic? Oh, you're in... Look up...
We're Googling right now, and we're getting some very interesting results.
It is horrendous. Don't you worry. If you ever have some downtime, please just, you know, go on YouTube, look up a couple of clips, and have a great old time with that. It's one of those games that you can very easily sit down with some friends and be like, what the hell is this nonsense? I'd very much recommend it.
But don't play it.
Don't play it. Don't play it at all.
So, Ian, Lindsay, what games would you say you've kind of liked and then wondered why other people don't seem to?
The big one on this list for me is Bulletstorm. The single player I actually loved, and the multiplayer was even better. And I was very, very sad that they didn't sell enough. People clearly didn't like it enough for them to want to make a sequel to this, and it's the only game that I've ever played, was still playing when they took the servers down. And we didn't realize. We sat down to play it and we're like, why can't we connect? And then we did a bit of a search and it's like, oh my god, it's gone. And we were really, really sad because we were still actively playing this like just once every month. The thing about Bulletstorm is it's not a traditional shooter because it's not really about trying to make sure you don't die, because when you play it, you're generally in very little danger. It's just all about the creative ways that you can actually make kills happen. And I think a lot of people just didn't actually play it the way it was intended. It's really a game about collecting all of the different ways that you can kill somebody, and it was fantastic. And in multiplayer, you had to do things as a team. Like, you couldn't get through anything when you weren't playing as a team.
Yeah, I mean, I always described Bulletstorm as first-person Macworld.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it's pretty much the exact same concept, and it's bloody fun. Like, it's hilariously stupid and not at all, like, a thought-provoking anything. But it's just dumb, like, it's dumb, time-wasty fun that you can just sort of, you know, do while, like, messing around with some friends, and it's genuinely enjoyable, I've found. It's one of those... Oh, yeah, go ahead, sorry. Yeah, it's great. I actually really like it.
didn't review very well, and the world hated it, really hated it. So much hate for it online, just people saying they couldn't see anything about it, and people really focused on the fact that it was terrible bro humor. But deliberately, like it was really parodying that stuff because it was so stupid that it actually made me laugh at points, which is, I don't know, probably embarrassing to admit publicly.
I mean, that's a kind of common thread with a lot of conversations about games that parody or deliberately play on something that is not meant to be cool. You always have like the entire internet blow up at it as though it was a serious example of that. I mean, that kind of one of my examples of a game that I like that the world at large seemed not to was Lollipop Chainsaw from Goichi Suda, which is very much a parody of just like every single trope about the cheerleader and all that kind of stuff that you can imagine, and of course all the reviews took it quite seriously as you know an attempt to be sexy or exploitive or whatever, when in reality it's just it's taking the piss the whole way through. So yeah, I just don't think people get humor, satire, whatever.
I feel like that's the case with most things, unfortunately. Yeah, I mean, Lollipop Chainsaw's freaking great. That's a really, really like colorful, like acid trip of a game, and I love it. And I guess all of his games as well.
All of his games are kind of the same. They're always polarizing. There's a whole bunch of people that don't like anything he does, and then there's a whole bunch of people that kind of defend anything he does, which would be me. But yeah, I mean, Killer is Dead was absolutely slaughtered in the media, and it was. I found it to be really quite smart. Not necessarily in the way it played. I found it was frustrating in places in terms of the way it played, but just the theme, the visual style, the storytelling was all really quite weird, creative, wonderful, surreal, and various other words. And yeah, I see. What's his new one? Let it die.
Let it die. Let it die looks awesome.
Yeah, I saw that at E3, and of course people reacted, oh my god, it's a Goichi Suda game, so it must be terrible. But, the more I think people see of it, this one might just be as close to mainstream as he gets, because I think it's looking very good indeed.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a case with all of his games where he just sort of... He makes games that are very, very hard for people to critically review, because they're so bizarre and out there. And it's really unfortunate because his games are generally really interesting. I mean, Killer 7 was reviewed very mixed back in the day, I remember, and that game's rad. It's really, really cool. It's interesting, it's different, it's all these weird new ideas and mechanics, and then this ridiculously dark and terrifying story that I still don't quite understand.
I don't think anyone quite understands it. It's
I'm not even sure Suda understands it, to be fair. He's probably not. He's probably just sitting there with a beer and just being like, yeah, nah, whatever.
Yeah, that it is actually very much like him. Like, I got to meet the guy when I interviewed him for my book a couple of years ago now, and yeah, he's just like the most laid back kind of cool guy you'll ever meet. He's awesome, and you can see like he doesn't necessarily care a crap about the result, the way critics respond to his games. He's more interested simply that, you know, he finds an audience that do like them, and that way he can be creative and cool and all of that.
You have to remember that this is a guy who promoted No More Heroes 2 by handing out toilet paper.
Yeah.
It's so good. I wish I had ideas like that. It's wonderful.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I've always found about Suda is that, you know, his games kind of reveal that, to go back to your point before, they reveal a weakness in the way that people review games, like the entire way that criticism happens, because, you know, anything that is outside of a certain checklist of what makes a good game is therefore bad by default, and that doesn't necessarily need to be the case at all, as all of Suda's games kind of show. So, yeah.
And I think that I just want to have a quick little spiel about Battlefield 1, because it's a World War 1 shooter again, and that pleases me.
Woo! Exciting!
I know! It's so pleasing! I've missed World War 1 games.
Why are all the games like Call of Duty and stuff in space now? I don't understand. It shows you a big difference that Call of Duty has gone to space and Battlefield has gone back to World War 1.
I think the most telling thing is that their idea is that you will be the Red Baron. And I've never been more excited for anything in my life. Yeah, so that's all I wanted to say about that. That's great.
We wanted to mention a recent game in the vein of games that were critically panned that we liked. We have heard that the reviews for the Doom multiplayer beta that was a couple of weeks ago, where people really hated it, whereas we actually played it basically all day and really enjoyed it. A bit of a gasp of fresh air on the PlayStation of a fast-paced shooter where everything's been Call of Duty and Battlefield. I love Battlefield, but, you know, it was like a Quake experience on a PlayStation, and for me that's really exciting. I can see there were a lot of shortfalls where it wasn't quite as awesome as Quake was. Like, there's a few little mechanics missing, and the fact they've brought loadouts in instead of picking up weapons off the map. But overall, I can't believe that people actually hated that multiplayer beta.
They seem to have picked that perfect middle ground that made everybody hate it, from what I've read online. Yeah. They're right in between what Doom and Quake felt like, and in between things like Call of Duty, where they brought some of those features in and landed in the middle, like being able to jump and pull yourself up and stuff like that. We found all of those things to be a problem, to be honest, except the jumping. I got really used to that. Jumping and pulling yourself up was good. We found all of the loadout stuff to be not as good as not having those things, but it didn't actually cut down the core fun of playing that game.
Yeah. I played a bit of it as well, and you know, it was genuinely fun time. I don't feel it was anything special, but I'm also hoping that the single player campaign will make up for that. Yeah, it was a fun game. I mean, the shotgun is great. That's all I really wanted from Doom, in all fairness. Yeah.
It was special because it felt different for us, because it felt different to other shooters we've played, particularly because when we get together as a group locally, we play on the PlayStation.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, as anybody who's been following knows, I'm one of the critics of Doom. To say the least. I don't think I'll be getting a review copy of that one. But, I mean, I didn't have an issue really with the way the game played as such. I mean, I thought it was smooth, it was fast when it needed to be, and, you know, the maps were all designed the way maps should be designed. I guess my issue with it was more just the thematic side of Doom. You know, the original Doom was such a transgressive, out there kind of game, really pushing boundaries and all that, and this Doom is just very... very safe. in terms of its themes. So, I mean, the single player might change things completely. I haven't really got my hopes high for it. But, yeah, I don't have a problem with the way the game plays. So I can certainly see why people would enjoy that side of it.
Yeah. I guess it's like Resident Evil 5, where if you ignore all the non-Resident Evil stuff of it, and if you ignore all the non-Doom thing about it and just enjoy the gameplay of Doom and forget that it's trying to be another Doom, then it's quite good.
They just call it
absolutely. I mean, I think if they didn't call it Doom, I would have been far more positively inclined towards it. But the minute you call it Doom, you're kind of associating it, you know, the game with what Doom should be. And if it doesn't kind of match up with that, then there's issues for some people at least, one being me. So, yeah, I think that gives us a good overview. I didn't get a chance to talk about Nier again, but Alan would have killed me if I did. but otherwise, yeah, obviously everybody has games that they like that aren't particularly reviewed well critically. That's just the nature of the arts world. Everybody gets an opinion. But yeah, that kind of wraps things up for us this week. So thank you very much for appearing on the podcast, Lindsay and Ian. I really appreciate your time.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
And best of luck with Party Golf. I'm certainly going to look out for it, and I'm sure Alan will as well.
Thank you.
All right, and thank you for jumping on, Alan, as always.
Hooray.
And everybody out there listening, you'll be able to find us on our social medias. We'll put up Lindsay and Ian's as well, so you can follow them and pester them about banana modes. Until next week, thank you very much.
Digitally uploaded.